My name is Lawrence Allen.
I'm Ronald Shaw.
I'm Rahul Vora.
And this is Bad Time Radio.
Welcome to another Bad Time Radio, and this week it's an old-time radio episode, and we're discussing something that I don't think we've ever touched on the main feed before, but that was the CBS Radio's theater Stock and Trade, which is a really wrong-headed adaptation of a classic short story. In this case, it's The Telltale Heart, which spends about 5 to 10 minutes actually adapting the short story, and the rest mostly being about a creepy uncle. So I guess let's go around and would you recommend this? Ronald, you go first.
This is like a pretty good one for CBS Radio Mystery Theater. I would say this is like the voice acting especially stands out here. Of course you got Fred Gwynne, but who's the other guy, Lawrence? It was,
I don't remember. He's not like a star like Fred Gwynne. One second. I'll see if I can find it.
It's on the YouTube video. But he does a really good job in this. He plays the creepy uncle, and he has this like really, I don't know. It's just feels very like authentic, not too over the top, but very recognizable. So I quite like the acting in this one. The story was like, it was interesting enough to keep my attention and everything. Like I wasn't bored by it. I didn't think it was like too corny or anything like that. That being said, I don't think it was like super interesting. But I do think that this one was worth a listen. And this was like possibly the best CBS mystery radio theater that we've listened to. I'm not sure.
Yeah, definitely the best one in a long time. The other guy was Robert Dryden, who is basically just kind of one of the stock players of the CBS Radio Mystery Theater. He literally showed up in 304 episodes.
Yeah, he's in a bunch of other ones. But yeah, he was really good in this, I thought.
And I'll go next. It held my attention. It was pretty good. It sucks as an adaptation of The Telltale Heart because they don't do any of the things from The Telltale Heart. Like, literally, he's not even listening to the, like, there's no, like, incriminating heartbeat that drives a dude insane, even.
Well, there kind of is.
But it's like a metaphor or something, you know?
Yeah, I don't even know, yeah. Well, I think it's a metaphor in the original story, too, but...
No, in the original story, the guy actually does, like, think he hears a heartbeat, and this one he thinks he hears a clock.
Yeah, so okay, yeah, fair enough.
Actually, Telltale Heart.
And also, like, yeah, well, we can get to that later. I was going to say, like, there's no reason he should feel guilt in this one.
Yeah.
The real Telltale Heart, the guy's a real bastard and deserves it. That's kind of the best part about Poe.
I think in the original Telltale Heart, there's, like, no reason why it happens at all. The guy just, like, there's a guy who's super nice to him, but he has a creepy eye, and that drives the dude insane, and it's just one of those eruptions of irrationality.
Yeah.
Anyways, Rahul, what did you think?
It was decent. I think it was decent. It was well put together. I don't think it was compelling enough to give a recommend. But if you're a student of the mystery radio whatever, then it's worth it. If you're a normal person, no.
Yeah. I don't know. Anyways, let's go ahead and roll for the summary. What do you guys think?
Let's do it.
Sure, dude.
Fuck, it's me. Okay.
Sounds good.
You
can pick someone else. Remember, that's a rule now.
No, I think that's only a rule for you because you made it up. Okay.
You agreed to it. That
all
one
rules are made up.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It's like that old definition of the law where it's just people doing things.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
I never consented to the law, by the way.
Anyways, look, go ahead and give me a minute 30 and we'll...
I don't know. I think we should get into this. Yeah.
I've got a platform and I'm going to stand on it.
Ronald just takes a hard turn into sovereign citizen.
Yeah, it's not that hard of a turn.
Yeah,
people saw
it coming from a mile out.
All right, so a tangent. So one of my hobbies for a while back was I would go in and you can look at the clearance decisions of the Department of Energy, it's like public record because there's essentially court proceedings. And so you could see like why people didn't get clearances and, you know, they would appeal them and then still not get them. Cause if you get turned down, the appeal does nothing usually. But there was one guy where he didn't get a clearance because he was a sovereign citizen who hadn't paid taxes in 3 years. And they could find all these posts online where he's like, I don't believe in the government and the laws fake and shit. And then during the appeal, he's just like, look, I only said that stuff because I thought it meant I didn't have to pay taxes.
But which makes it legal.
Yeah,
right. That's a great thing to put on your clearance form. I will only break the rules if it benefits me personally.
Yeah, I only break the rules if I think that it like lets me get away with something that I normally shouldn't be able to,
especially monetarily. You know, yeah. I will break the rules for money, but nothing else. I promise, guys.
But also, the rules are fake. So just
yeah,
yeah.
I never consented to him, FYI.
Yeah, I said the rules were fake at one point. Maybe I don't believe that now. Who knows? It was. Let me summarize. Give me a minute 30.
All right, I got you. Three, two, one, start.
So we start on a man named Charlie and a woman whose name I've forgotten, and their daughter Ruthie. They are going to their Uncle Silas's farm, and because like Charlie can't hold down work in the city because he's got some kind of unspecified condition that gives him nervous headaches. Uncle Silas is initially very friendly, but he just starts working them to the bone and not feeding them any money for kind of unclear reasons, to the point where at the end of the first act, Ruthie, who is also being worked super hard, like her heart gives out and she just straight up fucking dies. And for some reason, there's no like follow up on this particularly, and everyone just kind of shrugs and accepts it. So next up, Uncle Silas makes a pass at the wife while Charlie is out of the room, and the wife basically says, oh, you're doing this deliberately, you're trying to kill Charlie so that like you can have me, you know, we're all alone out here, blah blah blah. And he doesn't deny it, but for some reason they just kind of act like that didn't happen. He keeps working Charlie harder and harder. Charlie hatches a vague scheme to get their car, which is broken, fixed so they can go to town. They try to leave, but it turns out that Silas had siphoned all the gas out of the car, so they only get about 10 miles and have to walk back. Silas also disposes of Charlie's pills, which are the only things that keep him sane. They have a vague plan to go in and, or they tell like this ranger who's out there every couple of months to go get them a new carburetor. He's like, well, I won't be out here for 2 months. And for some reason, Charlie's like, that's okay, even though everyone is literally dying or having sex crimes done to them. Yeah, and let me just finish up. The actual reason the story's called The Telltale Heart is eventually Silas tells Charlie to go sleep in the barn, and Charlie says no. So Silas delivers a supervillain monologue about, you know, how this is all his plan, and Charlie snaps and strangles him and hides him behind the clock. There's this big clock, and everyone keeps saying it's like a heartbeat to justify the title. And then the ranger or whatever comes back, and the clock had stopped when Charlie killed the guy, Uncle Silas. And as he's talking to the ranger, he hears the clock start and does the whole like being driven insane by that and the fact that the ranger can't hear it. And then he shows the ranger the body and gets committed and lives in a happy world where he just fixes clocks and forgets that his daughter died. And also it's commented that his wife is still hot.
Even though she's old.
Yeah. Very old, but very attractive, as E.G. Yeah. Marshall says. And that's the end. So I guess let's go to some high points. Rahul, do you got one?
Hot wife. Rahul, imagine the hot wife.
I was not going to do that, dude. But now that you brought it up. you know, I feel like there was an ambiance that came through. They did a good job of like weaving together a setting. I feel you kind of felt like you were out there. You had no options. You were totally isolated on creepy uncle/murderer's farm. And you were just desperate.
Yeah.
Why that desperation didn't make you act earlier, unclear. Maybe just when this was recorded, people had a lot of respect for people. Nowadays we're just like, yeah, just kill him, move on.
Yeah. that's how we all are, Rahul.
Yep. Yeah, the good old days back when nobody killed anyone.
Well, yeah. Dude, I mean, the guy killed his daughter, you know, and his, you know, like I feel like there would have been signs like his daughter's starving to death.
I really think that once a kid's died, you go get the police and try to get the guy prosecuted for something.
I mean, I don't... you're the ultimate caregiver, right? So that could be, you should have done something when your daughter went hungry for the first night.
Like this story makes, I think that this was with an idea of like those old like company towns where like you would get in and then they would like charge you for your house and they charge you for your equipment and you basically be stuck there forever. And that kind of situation, this whole setup makes a lot more sense because you can't leave. And you can't really overpower the whole company, right? Like one guy can't really do much.
Yeah.
Like as a 70-year-old guy, like Lawrence said, there's a 70-year-old guy that presides over the house and it's fucking Fred Gwynn. And you can tell by his voice, like this dude could fucking lay out a 70-year-old dude. Like it's not going to be a problem. Why is he tiptoeing around like a little baby all the time?
Yeah. You don't even need to lay him out. You could just sort of ignore him.
Just do what you want. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Like, I mean, pretty villainous, but you know, pretty rude.
I mean, what, once your daughter's in danger, you got to start grabbing more food and stuff.
You could just be like, I'm not, I'll feed the animals, but I won't seed the fields, you know?
Okay. Yeah. Or you can just take as much food as you want. It's clearly there.
Or you're like, you know what, old man? I'm eating your food and you're eating shit. And then you shit on his plate and make him eat it because, you know, he's old and you're strong.
And then if he complains, you just, you know.
Make you do it again.
Yeah, lock him to the radiator.
Remind me not to age around you, too.
Yeah. Well, no, it's fine to
age not because he's old. I mean, he's a piece of shit who tried to kill him. He even admits it. He even says, like, I am going to starve you until you're dead and steal your wife. And then he kills the guy and then he feels guilty for some reason. It's like, why would you be guilty about that?
Well, but you know, some people feel literally trying to murder you about murdering a fellow human. I could see why you wouldn't feel that way.
Right. Yeah. I guess I'm just a psychopath who's okay with defending myself instead of just fucking dying when somebody tries to kill me.
You know, like if we go to a restaurant and I'm like, no. Ronald's not ordering. I'm trying to kill him.
Yeah. Actually, I'm not going to let him eat for a while.
You know what? Anytime like you're serving food to Ronald and he asks you for seconds, you better fucking give him seconds.
Or Florence will be on to me.
Or he will kill you because it's self-defense, man.
Yeah. He's standing.
He was trying to fucking kill him. He didn't eat. He didn't give me a second burger.
Yeah, you know, I'll go with the high point next, which is that the guy at the very end delivers a monologue about, you know, how he's in this fantasy world now. And while that's going on, and, you know, he asks after his kid and, you know, all that. And while that's going on, because he's like fixing clocks, a literal cuckoo sound comes while he's talking. And you know what? Subtlety is weakness. That was good. Just he is insane. So whenever he speaks, there is a cuckoo noise.
I know writers who use subtext and they're all pussies or whatever the fucking quote is.
Yeah, fucking Garth Marenghi. We love him, don't we? Yeah. Also, I want a point of order. Uncle Silas is not 70 years old. He is, in fact, 69, and that is the funny sex number.
True. That's a good point. That is a good point.
Yeah. Ronald, you got something?
I kind of already mentioned it, but... just having Fred Gwynn in this episode, like, adds so much to it. His voice is so good. And, like, even though it is very hard to sell Fred Gwynn as, like, a weak, like, abiding kind of young man in a household when his voice is that deep and he just sounds like he's a giant, he does kind of sell it. Like, it works, I think. So, yeah, I think just, like, having him in this really elevates the whole thing.
Yep. Another high point I have is just that, you know, his wife kept it tight.
Yeah. You can't be against that, you know? Yeah. I have another high point. The young 9-year-old only had one line. Whenever they do kid voices in this, it's, like, generally terrible. So yeah, they just killed off the character right away. We didn't have to deal with it.
Though, don't you think? You could have been like, Papa, I'm hungry.
Feed me, Papa.
Do you have any more soup, Papa?
Please, sir. Yep, that would have been good.
Oh, I seem to have dropped my crutch, Papa.
You know,
he's like Tiny Tim and yeah. and Oliver Twist.
Oh shit! I thought it was from Futurama. That sounds from something else.
Oh my god!
So I think that the daughter was just the wife, the actress who did the wife. You know?
Yeah, there wasn't an actor listed for the daughter, so I assume that that's true.
I'm looking at her page. She is Anne Shepherd, spelled with two P's if you wanted to look her up. And there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 comments. And half of them are about how hot her voice is. So just people on the internet trying to get with this woman who I think has probably been dead for a very long time.
Man.
By commenting on her CBS Radio Mystery Theater play page.
Very, very, very sad for those people that they'll never get to make it with Anne Shepherd.
You should leave a comment.
Apparently she passed in 2002. Oh, wait, this might be a different Anne Shepherd.
Yeah.
There are like 2,000 Anne Shepherds.
Sure are a lot of them.
Does she have a middle name?
Not that I can see.
Oh, god damn it.
What's even the point?
That is a different that is probably a different one because it's got a different, well, who the fuck knows? This is not great radio.
Yeah.
What is good radio?
I highly because like it's spelled differently, but it's also like she's in a lot of stuff from about the same time. Looks like radio shows too.
The picture, one of the pictures is the same. Who the fuck knows? Anyways, let's move on. Yeah. I guess my high point is just this is a very effective sort of documentary or demonstration of the power of mindset, because Uncle Silas is a Sigma, totally unbound by society's rules for good and ill. And that's why he's so easily able to dominate Fred Gwynne, who, in spite of his superior size and strength, who is a Beta, very submissive and could never raise his hand against a Sigma without being driven insane by the sheer unnaturalness of the act.
Yep. That's true.
I'm not saying be like Uncle Silas. I'm just saying there's power in being like Uncle Silas.
It sounds like you're saying you worship Uncle Silas. And
well, he did not say that.
Yeah, exactly. I'm reading between the lines here.
Yeah,
you probably have like a shrine to him at your place.
Yep, I built a shrine between listening to this episode this morning and, you know.
Yeah. I got a glass of warm milk over here. You want a little sip?
I started calling Bianca a pretty young heifer.
Did that happen in the
show? Yeah. Yep. That's how he tries to pick up the wife. That's his big line.
I ain't seen a young woman in her shift in quite some time.
So
I don't know why I'm doing it such a Kentucky. He's not nearly that regal.
Yeah. Well, I haven't seen a woman's ankles in nigh on 40 years. Time to do a sex crime. Try to, at least.
What the crazy part to me is, he is down so bad that as soon as he gets a letter from his nephew that's like, hey, Unc, can I stay with you for room and board and like do some work for your farm? He's like, I'm going to fucking murder this guy and fuck his wife, even though he's never met her or even seen her.
Yeah.
That's like, down pretty fucking bad, dude.
Yeah. Well, he is evil, you know.
Has he ever done anything like this, you guys think?
Probably. I mean, Lawrence thinks he's immortal. I dispute that, but...
You know, I don't see any evidence that he's immortal.
Right, there's no evidence of his immortality beyond the clock that the insane dude...
I love that I've somehow sold you on the clock as evidence.
Well, it's that's clearly what you not. Think is evidence.
I mean, I don't know...
Charlie's the only one that ever heard it, so.
And he's insane.
Well, maybe. Probably.
I mean, he does go to a mental hospital at the end.
Well, insane by the end for sure, but he hears it before that.
But that was his descent.
He also hears it, I mean, clearly the uncle hears it. Because he says, like, oh, everybody comments on that.
Yeehaw!
You joke, but he does. He has that, like, kind of southern slur where he's like, everybody... Everybody always says that.
You sound like, I don't know why, you remind me of Leo in Django Unchained.
I sound, no, Leo isn't, he doesn't slur his words like that. He's got diction.
But they are both Southern, Ronald.
Yeah,
they are both Southern. In this one, the guy always says stuff like, everybody, and you want a little milk, stuff like that, like... In Django, I feel like his accent's more like, Like, you know, he like very clearly enunciates every syllable. Like, well, I was intrigued, but now you have me interested, or whatever it is.
You're right.
Wow, you thought a lot about how racists talk.
Well, you know, not everyone with a southern accent is racist. Although,
all of
Ronald's, you know,
renditions
are, it's over,
for some reason.
When the two things cross, me and southern.
You know, so I'm going to transition.
Watch out, Irish.
Well, Ronald is, we think, Irish, so he's allowed to say those things. Maybe.
Somebody has thrown a bottle at me for some reason for being Irish.
Ronald was just walking around one town, in downtown somewhere, and someone threw a bottle at him and shouted, "Go away, you stupid Mick," or something like that. It's like,
which is very confusing, because, I mean, I guess I'm Irish, but, you know.
You don't look it particularly.
I mean, I'm just pretty generically a white guy.
It's extremely fucked up, honestly, because it could have seriously injured you.
Yeah, also that.
You know, like, let alone the racist insult.
It didn't get very close to me, but yes.
I mean,
it's true. Like, somebody throwing a ball at you is pretty fucked up. I don't think that they were in their right mind.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I didn't even see who it was, really. I just heard him.
Did you start running or anything?
Honestly, it didn't even really register that they were talking to me at first. But then I looked around, and I was like, nobody else is around.
You stopped for a second, started puzzling on your family tree, and you're like, am I Irish?
Yeah, right.
I guess so. Immediately.
I'm pretty sure I asked my parents after that, like, am I Irish? And then I think I am. According to my family tree, I'm like,
hey,
like
Papa,
quarter Irish or something.
Irish.
Yeah,
I like that you didn't even attempt an Irish accent. None of us have it, so it's good you did.
Yeah.
Anyways, let's get into some low points, which is, okay, so they're stuck on the town in the farm with this guy who, like, has gone on this long monologue about how he's going to kill the father and fuck the mother. And then a game warden comes, and instead of just asking him for a ride into town, the father's like, hey, could you bring me a carburetor? And the guy's like, sure, in 2 months. And and Charlie's just like, yeah, that's good. I'll wait to 2 months. Instead of just, hey, can I hop in the back of your car? There is a criminal here who keeps doing crimes to me.
Absolutely insane moment in this thing. You're just like, what are you doing? And also, like, that guy's like, sure, I'll buy you a carburetor and bring it back. And you don't have to front me the money or anything. It's like, what are you doing? You don't even know this guy. And
it
turns out he's a fucking
70s.
Psychopath.
It was the 70s, so carburetors cost like 20 cents or something, you know.
Clearly it cost enough that he was like, I'll take your old one out and they'll rebuild it, and that'll be cheaper.
A carburetor, of course, 20 cents in those days could buy you 2 months' rent. So
yeah.
A
cup of coffee, a slice of pie, and that's with the Alamo.
You know, I'm actually looking at it. A carburetor now, the replacement costs between $200 and $600, and if you're willing to go aftermarket, it only costs, well, $1,100 to $1,200. So,
quite
a range.
Yeah.
What's that?
Oh, nothing.
But yeah. I guess they were probably pretty cheap in the 70s.
Probably cheap as fuck.
How much does a carburetor cost in 1974? Let's see, Google.
Do you even find that?
Well, a 1974 carburetor costs about, $500 now. But that's not really what I was asking now, was it, Google?
Yeah, I mean,
It's just I found people who were selling those for people who want to rebuild their cars.
Yeah. Oh. All right, Rahul, you know this better, but, like, are carburetors still a part of the car, like in modern vehicles?
No, modern
it's
cars
not,
are
right?
fuel,
like,
fuel injection.
Yeah, they do fuel injection, right? So, like, all the pieces that you're finding are, like, not normal part replacements. It's, like, for old cars.
My 86 Accord was carbureted. That was, like, I think around when the switch started happening.
Is that the technical term, carbureted?
Yeah.
Fascinating. Okay, let's move on. Other low points. Enough of talk of auto parts.
I mean, I think we really covered the main low point in this, which is just, like, the lack of urgency and the lack of, like, the characters really fighting back at all until the very end.
Yeah.
Which is typically, I mean, that's normally my problem with horror movies, and it isn't typically their fault in horror movies, so it's not the exact same situation, but, you know.
Yeah, and this
lack of fighting back just makes the whole thing less compelling to me.
Well, it's like the uncle should be the one who's scared, right? Yeah. This guy who could be hostile to him, he beats the shit out of him at some point.
He does.
And then the uncle just keeps fucking him around. It's like, well, what did you think was going to happen here?
After, yeah, maybe the uncle had like some unspoken magical mind power.
I mean, if that's the case, there's absolutely no evidence for it other than just the fact that it, like, they don't fight back as much as they should. There's no scene where he's like, come here, woman, and the woman, like, does against her better judgment or anything.
He does say to her that you'll be asking me to in the end or something.
Yeah, but that's just like he's going to starve her or something, man.
I think that was just psychopath talk.
Mm. Yeah.
But it's also like, clearly he doesn't because he gets beat to hell twice and then dies.
They also do this really weird thing in the show where they're like, he doesn't like people going into his room. So I'm like, okay, there's something in there. And then there's nothing in there.
That's a clock.
Yeah, that's a clock that might have his soul in it or something. Oh, I got an... So they've come back from like the car breaking down, right? And they're like... Uncle Silas, for some reason, is doing this buddy-buddy thing where he's like, I want us to be friends and all that. So he's like, hey, here, let's have a drink. And then he's like, hey, before you drank yours, Charlie, why don't you go do 20 fucking hours of chores? And Charlie just does it.
He's like, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, when it's like, you know what he's about to do. Like, he's going to hit on your wife again. And he just does it anyways.
He like literally just took away your chance, sabotaged your escape attempt, which might have worked had he not done that. Yeah. And he killed your daughter. He has never done a nice fucking thing for you and your entire acquaintance with him. And you're still letting him push you around. Like, I was telling a mindset joke, but like that is like the best explanation, honestly. It's just that there's some weakness in Charlie that they don't really demonstrate, but that is stopping him from fighting back effectively.
Yeah. He has like some childhood trauma from being around Uncle Jonas or whatever.
Yeah. Anyways, I guess let's go to a game, man.
Really not a lot to say about this one. I it's not like bad enough to really make fun of, and it's not good enough to really dive into any of the ideas.
Yeah, I should have scouted it. In my defense, the description of it made it sound like it was going to be Fred Gwynne playing a pervy uncle. And as we know, when Fred Gwynne plays a pervert on the CBS Radio Mystery Theater, that is great fun. So
Yep, that's
it's
true.
It's all like slave bets or, well, it was the slave bet, but that was a hell of a thing.
Yeah. And I mean, honestly, hearing Fred Gwynne's voice, nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. Okay. So first off, you know, we talked a lot about mindset. So I figure we're bringing back an oldie, but a goodie, Secrets of the Mindset Masters, where we, who have, of course, mastered mindset, give you, the listener, useful tips for how to achieve proper mindset, master your life, and just generally have the life you deserve.
And we're all people that you can absolutely trust.
Yep. We're going to give you great advice. And we definitely don't like either have such weird, fucked up views of the world that our advice is pointless and unactionable, or we're not giving you bad like advice because we think it's funny. All good advice. So anyways, Ronald, why don't you go first?
Okay. Now, have you guys ever gone to work, you clock in, you do your full day of work, then at the end of the day, you're like, well, that was it. I'm done for the day. Well, you know what? That's complete beta behavior. I'm sorry to tell you.
I'm a beta. I don't like work. In fact, if anything, I leave early sometimes.
Oh my gosh, that is just pathetic. Like, what you need to be doing is sticking around for 4 or 5 extra hours after work, just really picking up the slack and doing a lot more extra, even though you're not getting paid for it. Now, you might be saying, like, actually, you sound like a corporate drone. Well, guess what, folks? You sound like a corporate zombie. I don't know. It's bad, though. And I'm not tired because I've been working too much. That's you. So consider this next time when you're at work. Do a lot of extra work for no extra money and just generally take it on the chin whenever the company decides to not promote you or not give you any raise for the year. Like, that's all good stuff.
Yeah, so I take it like you might think where you should do this because it'll earn you extra promotions or recognition or make people like you. But you're saying that no, it probably won't, and that should not deter you at all.
If anything, it'll actually make you less likely to get promoted because you're essentially going to be a drone that listens to orders and doesn't question anything. Yeah. So you're pretty much good where you are.
Yeah, in fact, if they promoted you, you'd probably do less work, so can't have that.
Yeah,
you're
exactly.
So important to the team now.
Yep. And then you're irreplaceable, so they can't give you a raise, and they can't promote you, and then eventually maybe you might think you should leave and go to a different job. No, just stay your current job and take the abuse of your higher-ups.
Now, Ronald, if I follow this advice, it seems like it might, for instance, make my wife think I'm having an affair, or at the very least that I don't love her anymore. Does that
is that's a great point that I want to address.
Uh-huh.
It'll make you more desirable to women because they'll be like, "What does he do all the time?"
Oh, right, it's an air of mystery because they ask you what you're doing, and the explanation is so technical that they're like, "Well, that's a lie."
Yeah.
Or you just straight up can't tell them, maybe, depending on what kind of confidentiality agreements you've signed.
Plus, the stress of the job will start to get you balding, therefore more mature.
Maybe put on a little weight, get one of those dad bods everyone's talking about.
Women love that stuff.
Yep.
Now, circling back, have you tried having HR contact your wife? Because that might work. They could explain that you're tip-tapping on your keyboard for them, perhaps?
Now, Rahul, I put it to you that HR, far too busy, and also contacting them goes against the drone lifestyle. So what you should do instead is pay one of your coworkers $100 to call your wife and poorly pretend to be HR.
Oh, smart. Mm.
Yeah. So that's one thing you can do. But the better idea is to make a fake account on Facebook. That's an attractive woman. Have her start interacting with your Facebook to make it look like you've made a new friend, but don't tell your wife about it, and she'll get jealous and like you more.
Hell yeah. Women are primarily jealousy motivated. So if
this applies to women too, for, you know, just switch the gender roles or whatever your preferred sex is.
Yeah. And then she'll be like, okay, I got to compete with this Facebook person and I got to compete with the job. Oh my God, I got to work so hard to keep this guy, as opposed to just being like, well, he doesn't seem to care about me at all and just leaving.
Yeah, she definitely won't leave you. She definitely won't stop respecting you. None of that stuff will happen. So don't worry about that.
Yeah.
That's a guarantee on my part.
Yep. Okay. I'm going to go ahead and go next.
All right.
Which is, okay, now an important thing. There are two very important things with this mindset stuff. First, obviously, you're going to have a lot of money and you're going to need investments. And secondly, if you're going to rise and grind, you really need, you know, a bit of motivation every morning. So here's a way of doing both. So what you do is you cash out your 401k, you empty your bank account, you get all your money together. And then you go to cameo.com and you look up Emma Gregory. I know what you're thinking. Emma Gregory, the voice of Minthara, Saint Celestine, all of the Sisters of Battle books. Probably other things that Lawrence isn't familiar with. Yes.
We were all thinking that. Yeah.
Yeah. That's Emma Gregory. And you just keep paying her for cameos over and over and over. Anytime anything happens to you, you get a cameo from her about it. And even when nothing happens to you, you're just like, okay, hey, Emma Gregory, could you record me like a get up message today telling me to like, hey, get up and go to work and do a great job. That way, every day you've got a new message from Emma Gregory that's going to motivate you. And I know you're like, well, I emptied my savings. So, you know, how's this good financial advice? It's like, well, think of how much more money you're going to get when you're properly motivated by Emma Gregory in her, you know, Saint Celestine or Minthara voice every day being like, go get that money.
And yeah. you can
much better.
And you can keep feeding that back into Emma Gregory videos.
Yeah. Emma Gregory videos have never gone down because she only started releasing them about a week ago and the price has not changed.
Also, if you don't have money, the question is, how many kidneys do you have?
And are you willing to do something super fucking illegal?
Is it illegal to sell your own kidney?
Oh, yeah. The only place it's legal to do that is Iran.
Oh, there's a problem. Fly to Iran. What is it, $100?
Yeah, $100 at a spot on a terrorist watch list.
But it's for an Emma Gregory video.
Yeah, you got to do it. Yeah, don't sell anything else, just a kidney. That's the only thing of value you could possibly have.
Yeah, I know. If some people might be like, well, could I mortgage my house? No, kidneys, yeah. Only.
Could I just do a job for money? No, kidneys.
Well, I mean, you could do a job for money too, but only because you're motivated by the power of
it. Yeah, only after the Emma Gregory, not before.
Yeah. Anyway, so that's my advice. Just, you know, give Emma Gregory hundreds of thousands of dollars to the point where she probably closes her Cameo because she's gotten too weirded out by you.
Now, what do you do if she stops producing cameos for you, accepting your money?
You take all of those cameos and you feed it into a generative AI so that it can make you more Emma Gregory things. But then you figure out where Emma Gregory lives and you just kind of keep shoving wads of cash under her door every time you use the generative AI to make a video of her.
That seems fair to me.
Now, what if she has a weather strip on the bottom of her door?
You tie the money to a brick and huck it through a window.
Oh, good thinking, dude.
That is really respectful.
Yeah, or you go up to her on the street and just hand her an envelope, and then after a while she might start avoiding you, so you start paying random strangers to go up to her and hand her envelopes.
Yeah, she's like in the John Wick universe, only instead of assassins are people giving her money.
Yeah.
Yeah, just hire a pickpocketer to put money in her pocket.
Yeah, I mean, I assume you only have like tens of dollars to give her at this point because your life is totally collapsed.
And you're spending money on pickpocketers.
But not to like pickpocket. Yeah. Also, at this point, you are hopeless and living on the streets of London or wherever. I think she's British based on her accent. Anyway, so that's my Emma Gregory grind set mindset.
Well, that's honestly genius.
Yeah.
Very specific. Like it's not happened before. Nice.
Yeah, and Rahul, what do you have?
Okay, shit. Well, imagine you're on the streets of some South American city.
Hell yeah.
And people are rolling past on dirty little scooters that make a lot of noise and a lot of smoke.
Wow, this is a really racist imagination so far, but let's keep going.
What is the racist part?
I don't know.
I mean, I can't put my finger on it, but it definitely
feels
like...
You did just say a foreign country and then call it dirty and little.
No, it's dirty little scooters, dude.
All right.
Like the two-stroke scooters, they just like shit out smoke? Okay, well, you know what I'm talking
about. I ruined the mindset.
Yeah, you failed to consider a very important piece of mindset, which is to be kind of racist.
Oh my god, you piece of shit.
Look, it's not racism.
I'm getting assassinated over here.
It's nationalism. Big difference.
Yeah, it's not racism. It's just thinking other people from other countries are different from you and very bad. But it's colorblind.
Different in a bad way.
He hates the French too, and they're white as fuck.
Look, anyone who rides on a scooter is out. All right.
All right.
Okay.
You're walking down the street and you see two young men. And they're engaged in this interesting sort of dance. They're both holding blades and they glitter in the night. And they look like two storks as they dance back and forth. They slash at each other and they keep darting and jumping back and darting and jumping back. And you're wondering what, you know, everyone's ignoring them, just riding past on their scooters. Anyway, so they're trying to hit each other. You don't even know what they're fighting about. Eventually, you know, there's a snick sound. And one of them jerks away and he's clutching his eye. You don't know what happened. But then he moves his hand and you see the tip of the blade is broken off in his eye. He pulls out the blade and it clatters to the ground. Anyway, my secret of the Mindset Masters is use that type of adrenaline in your life.
So we go to a South American country and hope we see something that gives us PTSD, and then we can use the fact that we have PTSD to give ourselves adrenaline.
I don't think you're listening. I don't think you're listening, man.
Do you imagine that kind of thing happens often in the streets of South America, as you put it?
Couldn't even give us a country, just all of South America.
somewhere.
There's a lot of people having. There's a lot of people sword fighting while Bazoo's by. Ignore them, and sword somehow breaks off in somebody's.
Well, the guy had an adamantium skeleton. You see.
Oh, okay.
That's the part of the story that makes out. Most sense.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I, you know, if you understand it, you understand. If you,
if you know, you know.
If you're not ready for the meaning,
Story, you just don't get it, man. Ready.
I guess I don't.
Maybe when
I guess
you're a little bit older.
I imagine it happening, and then I get some adrenaline.
No, you got to see it.
You got to
see it in your mind.
You
got to
feel the knife enter your eye, and then you're flooded.
So now I got to be the guy fighting.
Oh yeah.
Okay. That
so who's the guy watching? Different
from what you said.
Is that you watching or
be the narrator or the fighter?
Just be involved.
Do something, bro. I'm sick of you just sitting around all day.
Look, just be involved in that kind of situation somehow. You could be a sword fighter. You could be a narrator.
You could be the scooter guy.
Yeah, you could be one of the people ignoring it. You know. I mean, probably don't do that, though.
Actually, you know what? You can not be involved. I don't give a shit.
But the point is, Rahul saw it, and
it was badass. If I saw it, he means he thought about it.
I will say, eerily, like, beautiful turn of phrase in the description.
I like that they were storks. That was cool.
It was real, actually.
Yeah.
That was a real story.
Right. Okay. In what context?
Well, I mean, I wasn't there, but, you know, I saw a video of a knife fight.
That's not the same thing at all. Were they on scooters?
Look, I told you I didn't care, all right? Watch the video.
Was the video like a guy just walking around town and then he came across a knife fight?
No. I don't know how these things get recorded, Ronald. And I don't know how the algorithm keeps feeding to me either. But yeah.
I think we know how the algorithm feeds to you.
Yeah, one guy got in the eye and it fucking broke off in his eye and he just yoinked it out, man. I was like, holy shit. That's hardcore.
But, I mean, God. The scooters and the swords and the beauty in the moonlight.
Well, you know, that was also, a dramatic license.
I don't think YouTube lets you, like, upload shit that violent. So, like, are you on,
you don't really
like,
see anything.
Shoot?
You don't really see anything.
Also, you can often skirt YouTube policies by just uploading it anyways, and then hopefully nobody reports
it. Yeah, you just tag it as four children.
God.
Okay. Cool. Go for it, I guess. Go to South America, go online and type in knife fight and hope you see something that inspires you.
I enjoy that you changed the story from a knife fight to a sword fight, which is much more fantastical.
And put them on scooters for some reason.
Did I say sword? I don't think I said sword. Did I?
I think
yes, you
sword.
Did.
Are you sure? All right.
Check the tape. Check the tape.
Yeah, check the – roll it back.
Nope, it's two against one. You definitely said sword.
I'm pretty positive you said sword because I don't know
why.
There's no way
I said sword, but I might have said sword.
Okay, so I'm going to throw this out. Two people trying to knife fight on scooters somehow like funnier.
No, they weren't on scooters. They were just on. They were just people.
You just said they were scooters.
I just, you know, sometimes I let you go on and I just don't correct you.
You're the one.
Maybe he did that thing like, maybe one of them would do that thing like in Rumble in the Bronx. Where Jackie Chan's driving that car and he sticks the sword in the window and like puts his foot on it and then slashes the hover car.
That was so awesome.
Like,
dude,
imagine,
I loved that shit when I was a kid. Oh my
imagine,
God.
Imagine doing that to somebody driving by on a fucking scooter. Just like decapitate him.
Yeah, it totally would.
You know what? Let's change the mindset mastery. Just go ahead and do that.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Out the window.
You know what? Actually, I'm going to just throw this out there. Watch a Jackie Chan movie and do basically any of the stunts he does, and you will have mastered mindset.
Seriously.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
I think we can all agree on that one.
You know, I always wanted that big hovercraft that was in Rumble in the Bronx.
Whatever happened to hovercraft?
I don't know. They seem great. They seem
really cool, and like you could go on.
Do they use them in like the bayou or something?
They use fan boats in the bayou, but they're kind of different.
Yeah, they're kind of different. Like that kind of hovercraft, like I feel like I saw stuff about that in the 90s, and I don't think I've ever seen one like in film or in real life since.
It seems like they'd probably be pretty inefficient, although, yeah, probably.
Well, the whole tearing the skirt thing seems a problem, right? Like if you snag it on something, it'll tear that.
And then it just doesn't work.
Right.
I don't know if it doesn't work. Yeah.
Well, the air would flow that, right? It only works as the air is only going up the gap.
I guess.
Yeah. I don't know.
I mean, that might have just been like a thing for the movie.
Here's another mindset mastery thing. Think a lot about hovercrafts.
Yeah, hovercrafts rule.
Try to figure out what happened with them. They're pretty. They seem neat.
Yeah, they're very big, and I don't know what the point of them is. But
I assume they're really loud, which could
be. Yeah, that's cool.
Big old fan. But what if you got a Dyson? Because those are quiet.
Okay. Yeah, so you get a Dyson vacuum and use it to power a
hovercraft. Yeah, quiet ass hovercraft. Boom, baby.
Okay.
It's thinking.
You solved it. I mean, yeah. I do think that the fact that you're going to either have be limited by the battery of the Dyson or the power cord. So you're going to have a pretty short effective range. But, other than that.
The batteries are
going to be just better. Plug it. You just plug the Dyson into the hovercraft.
Oh, yep. That's it. It's like plugging up an extension cord into itself. Bam. Infinite power.
That's true mindset mastery right there.
Yeah, forget about Jackie Chan. Infinite power.
Yep, I solved the energy crisis and global warming. You're welcome, America.
Yeah. Anyways, solve global warming, though?
Yeah, because all we have to do now is just build big enough power strips and plug them into themselves. Yeah,
that's not exactly all we have to do, dude. The oceans are acidifying, bro.
Yeah, but once we stop all carbon emissions, because everything's just powered by a power strip plugged into itself, that's all going to get... That'll go away. And
dude, there's like 1,000 years of warming already locked into the system.
Now that we've got free power, we can literally doing all the decarbonization stuff.
All right, let's get started.
Yeah.
I like this plan.
Yep. Again, you're welcome.
Yeah. You just get one of those extension cords that has, like 5 plugs in it. So then you can plug itself in.
5
and
times
you got,
infinity?
And then you got 4 other plugs open.
Oh, exactly.
It's not better than the power strip for some reason.
And the best part is it's portable,
yeah.
And you're like, what about the cost of manufacturing the power strip? Well, you build a small thing to build small power strips and power it with a power strip, and then you just keeps kind of scaling up.
You bootstrap.
Like you ever played that game Factorio?
Yeah, exactly. It's like that with power strips.
Anyways. Have you played that, Lawrence?
No.
He knows what it is, though.
No, it's just... I mean,
vaguely.
All right, guys, I have another game for us.
Hit me.
It's a pretty simple game, and it's more of a thought experiment than a game. Okay? But, like, who do we imagine would be a fun character in this radio episode we just listened to replace Charlie with? Like a fun movie, TV, or comic book character?
Which one was Charlie?
He's the main guy. Fred Gwynn. So... I got two answers. First, it'd be pretty funny to just replace him with Herman Munster. They're both played by Fred Gwynn, and I feel like Herman Munster would be a good deal more assertive. Plus, he's sort of a Frankenstein monster, so he'll have a bit of an edge. And the other one, basic bitch answer, but replace him with Charlie from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. He's very good at scavenging off the land and soaking up abuse. So he'll just sort of think that this situation is an improvement because at least he has a bed and people don't shout at him in the middle of the night, and he'll be very happy.
Him
and the uncle might really get along, actually.
I mean, the uncle isn't that much different from Frank, except that his schemes are very slightly more evil, but also he's a little more put together.
He might actually be less evil, honestly, because Frank had people die in his fucking... factory.
He saw a guy get eaten by a pig once.
He's seen many pigs eat many men. It was a bloodbath. Okay, Raul, you got any?
My mind is bouncing between like different vengeful characters. I was thinking like Hannibal, or that's the only
maybe like Godzilla.
I mean, Godzilla, it's over too quick for the situation to really do anything. It's just, you know,
well, Godzilla, it seems like your only option is here on my farm.
And then he is incinerated.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, it's obviously the uncle would have to be a fucking idiot to do that, but he kind of had to be a fucking idiot to try it on Fred Gwynn, too.
Yeah, he's somehow sensed a fundamental weakness in Fred Gwynn that it doesn't really seem like he should have been able to.
I was thinking maybe like Ray Romano. Like, oh, come on. I don't want to do the chores out of the farm. Like, how would he get out of this situation?
I mean, it's basically, it just plays out almost exactly the same, except he complains in a funny voice a bit more.
And maybe his depressed brother would come over and be like, "Hey, Raven." I can't do his voice. Oh, so Ray gets a free room and board here.
I think it's weird that you guys know so much about It's All Everybody Loves Raymond.
I just know who Ray Romano is.
I barely know who Ray Romano is, honestly.
Dude, he's the greatest actor of our generation.
You guys aren't students of the sitcom like I am.
Yeah, that's right? Accurate. Yeah.
And by students of the sitcom, I mean I watched television in the 90s.
I've seen It's Always Sunny. That's a sitcom, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
One of the best.
Oh, shit. I'm something of a student.
Yeah, I'm something of a student of the sitcom. I'm not really a student of the sitcom. I don't know why I said that.
Myself.
I guess I've seen more than you guys.
You know, I'm something of a sitcom myself. There we go.
You know, I'm something.
Oh, okay. Let's put a freaking Green Goblin. What would he do?
I mean, again, he would just kill him.
Would he even be in this situation?
He would fly away out of his goblin.
What if he was the uncle?
Oh, that would make more sense.
Yeah.
That'd make a lot
more
sense.
Oh, yeah, then it would make more sense why Fred Gwynn couldn't leave, because, you know,
yeah,
he's goblins. Got goblins.
You just fly after him on a hoverboard.
Someone keeps fucking up your shit. I don't know who.
Dora and I, we're going to have a hell of a time.
That would have been better if the uncle had, like, a Jekyll and Hyde kind of thing going.
He was
nice and manipulative as opposed to just constantly horrible and mean, you know?
Yeah. It's pretty hard to root, or it's pretty hard to like understand Charlie's position in any way.
Yep.
So therefore I think the uncle should be replaced by Godzilla. Yeah.
But here's the twist. We replace Charlie with Biollante. Boom.
Oh yeah, there you go.
Who is the wife and daughter now?
Mothra and Anguirus.
Okay.
Biollante is my favorite kaiju. It is a combination of Godzilla, a rosebush, and a dead lady. And when Godzilla defeats it, it turns into spores and flies into space but not before briefly revealing the dead woman's smiling face staring down at her dead husband who cloned her into a rosebush.
What's the Godzilla villain that's just like toxic waste in the water that like kind of gets together in one big glob?
Oh, that would be Hedorah, my friend.
Hedorah. Yeah. I kind of like that one, even though it's very stupid.
I mean, it would be a Godzilla villain if it weren't dumb.
Yeah. But there's one scene in that one where, like, it just flies by and instantly, like, kills a whole group of people, and that seems pretty cool.
Yeah. It, like, skeletonizes them. It's like, that movie's weird because it's mostly a goofy, like, kids movie. But then there's, like, all these absolutely, like, horrible or weird things in it.
Yeah, it's like, what's the tone here? Because, like, right before that, they're doing this really goofy, like, band scene, I think. Right? Yeah. Like, kind of like a go-go band. And it's going on for a while, and it's all about, like, peace and love on Earth. And then he just fucking incinerates everyone there. But then the rest of the movie is still pretty lighthearted after that. And you're like, what are you guys trying to say?
Yeah. Anyways, you guys want to do some recommendations and cautions?
Yes, sir.
Rahul, why don't you go first?
Okay. I will recommend The Expanse. again. I'm rewatching it, and I was telling Ronald this a while ago, yesterday, and it's just such a breath of fresh air when in the first season they're alluding to things that you don't know are relevant at the time, but upon a rewatch, it's obvious that they're alluding to things that happened like 5 seasons later or 4, whatever. It's just nice that there was a plan going in.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. So I recommend The Expanse again.
Do you have a caution?
No caution.
Ronald?
Yeah, this week I just have a single recommendation. But it's very on theme for this episode. So this was kind of a remake of Edgar Allan Poe, Telltale Heart. The show I'm recommending is called The Fall of the House of Usher. It just released like last week on Netflix. So it's a 2023. This was a Mike Flanagan show. So if you're familiar with him, he did Midnight Mass and The Haunting on Hill House, a couple others. This was a pretty good, interesting take on it. It's not a specific Edgar Allan Poe story. It's its own series, but it kind of adapts separate Poe stories throughout it. And it was quite good. There's a lot of really good actors in it. A lot of them are my Flanagan regulars, including Carla Gugino, who is absolutely gorgeous.
She is.
And she's basically the lead, kind of the villain, but she's probably the most, the character with the most scenes. And yeah, this was just like, it's only about 8 episodes. It's great for Halloween. If this releases before Halloween and you're interested in something, and so it's just like a really good time to watch it. I had a good time with it. I don't think it's my favorite of his, but I had a great time with this one, and I pretty much binged it. So,
how scary is it?
I didn't really find it scary. There's for sure some jump scares, but they're pretty obvious when they're coming, I thought. And there's some violence, like there's some stuff that's like pretty gross. But it's mostly, most of the scares are kind of like, or most of the terror of this is like the fact that people are really bad and do really bad shit to each other. Which I enjoyed.
Hell yeah. And no caution?
I have no caution this week. I haven't really had that much time to watch stuff, unfortunately.
Okay, so I'm going to go. So I watched this movie, No Exit, on Hulu, and it's not like the plot is basically that there's a woman, she's in rehab, she finds out her mother is dying, they won't let her out of rehab to go see her mother, so she breaks out, she gets snowed in at a rest stop, and while she's at with like 5 other people, and while she's out in the parking lot trying to get a cell phone signal, she discovers a truck or a van that has a little girl like tied up in the back, and the rest of the movie is her trying to like deal with like figuring out whose van it was. And then once she figures out whose van it was, like trying to like navigate the situation of like, you know, she's stuck in this rest stop with these intensely dangerous monsters. And
it sounds cool.
Yeah. And it's not supernatural or anything. It's like a pretty low stakes thriller. It kind of reminded me of like Phone Booth or Cellular, you know, that kind of like mid 2000s kind of constrained little things that used to get theatrical releases and now are mostly on streaming. But it got a lot of, you know, did everything I wanted to do. The performances are nice. It's got Dennis Haysbert is like a, you know, avuncular, but also like strong guy. Just worth checking out if you've got like, oh, and also it has a beautiful runtime of 1 hour and 30 minutes.
Love that.
Yeah. So, you know, that's a great length for like a little thriller. And then my other recommendation is I read this book. Well, it's a novella called Rolling in the Deep. And it's about like cable company, like it's basically the Sci-Fi Network, and they go out and they mount expeditions where they have real scientists who go along because they're getting like trips and funding for their research, and then they film a documentary of them looking for a cryptid while the scientists are basically doing research in the background, and then they spike it up with some fake footage to be like, we actually found Nessie. And in this one they're like going out and looking for mermaids around the Marianas Trench, and they find something horrible, and I guess like they kind of tell you that everyone dies on like the first page, so, but the whole thing is just like fine watching them all like die horribly. And as one of the greatest, or one a very good, oh no, moment in it, which I really appreciated. And it is absolutely fucking mean, which is a great thing for a short novella to do. I don't like my horror novels super mean usually because, you know, you're going to invest that much time just watching the characters suffer for no reason. Not great. But a novella wants to just like kill everyone and there's no real point and everything just sucks. Hell yeah, go for it. And this one really did that. So yeah, that's Rolling in the Deep by Mira Grant. And I guess that's about it. Rahul, do you have a plug that isn't something fucking horrifying? I swear to Christ.
Not this time.
What was the one the last time?
The teeth thing. If your gums can do this, go seek medical attention.
Oh, God. That thing. That's
that
right.
Was a good one.
For some reason, I thought you were talking about the teeth tapping.
Nah,
ASMR thing.
That's fine. That was on It's Always Sunny, so it's funny. But nah. Well, I guess
That was the gums, to be fair. It wasn't the teeth.
Yeah, gums are much worse.
Ugh. I mean, teeth aren't great either.
Did you know the gums are like, they're like a perpetually open wound?
I mean, you just look at them and know that.
Yeah, but also,
it's just weird to think about.
Stop fucking talking about fucking gums.
All right, I found one.
I guess I had blanked that video out of my mind, and now it's back.
Yeah, I only saw a couple of seconds of it, and it haunts me every bit as much as those scary YouTube videos that like stop me from being able to go to sleep sometimes.
Dude, you watch horror movies, man. This is nothing for you. So
I've
weird.
Got a thing about tooth trauma. I think because my mom was a dentist, one time she took me to like it was some kind of conference, and there was really nothing. I'd forgotten a book, so I just sat in on it. And for some reason, the conference was basically just showing all the horrible things that smoking can do to your teeth, gums, and jaw.
Oof,
and nice. I never smoked, but now I'm also kind of scared of teeth. So
yeah, that checks out.
I guess my plug is that bad. If you really want to, you could probably stop your kid from smoking by showing them a bunch of fucked up teeth. But
at least it worked with you.
The picture's literally on the pack of cigarettes now.
They did that in Europe, at least.
It literally doesn't stop people.
You probably wouldn't have smoked anyways.
Yeah, but when I was in Europe, okay, there's a lot of like fucked up teeth on the packagings and stuff, but there was also one that was just a couple like holding each other and weeping to illustrate that smoking cigarettes can make you infertile.
Oh.
They're like, we got to go abstract in this one.
I didn't understand. I was like, maybe they lost somebody?
Yeah, I thought they were like crying because they were both going to die.
Yeah, that would have been, yeah.
Then everyone would always be dying, Ronald.
Yeah.
Anyways, from all of us at Bad Time Radio, don't worship Satan. It's bad for you. And have a great week.
If you'd like to recommend an episode of Old Time Radio for us to listen to, send us a question for the mailbag, or a pedantic correction, you can reach us at radiobadtime@gmail.com. Our theme music is Finger in the Bottle by We Ashore Dedicated off their album No Ski Here Okie Sap. Thanks so much for listening.
Life's gonna gather it.